Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Thank you for joining us for episode number 3 of the Everything Coworking Podcast. Really excited for today's guest, Mike LaRosa, who, at the recording of the podcast, was sitting on his balcony in Bali, Indonesia, for the first ever co-working unconference in Asia. So Mike and I have a great conversation. You can hear some birds, exotic birds chirping in the background, a little tropical breeze blowing around as he enjoys his amazing weather, and talk about the top 5 trends that he sees in co-working for 2015. And Mike has a lot of experience in the co-working space. He is on the executive team planning the Juicy Unconference for this year in May in Berkeley. So he has a lot to say. We have a lot of links to share in the show notes, which you can find at everythingcoworking.com/3. Hello, everyone. I am here. It's morning for him with Mike LaRosa, who is live today. Mike, you can tell me where you are.
I'm at Coworking Unconference Asia 2015 in Bali, Indonesia, and this is the first Coworking Unconference to be produced in Asia by an individual. His name is Peter Wall, and he's the founder of Hubud, which is the first coworking space in Bali in a town called Ubud. So it's a play off of Hub in Ubud, so just Hubud. And Ubud is a town probably an hour and a half inland. So we're kind of smack dab in the middle of the island.
And it only took you like 86 hours to get there.
27 there, and I think we have like 31 back. I don't know if anyone knows what to do with 8 hours in the middle of the night in Singapore on a layover. I'm all ears.
Awesome. So thank you so much for getting up early to talk to us this morning. And thank you for your beautiful nature sounds in the background. If you can hear the birds, are you outside?
I am, yeah. I'm on my balcony to get access to Wi-Fi. My roommate and I kind of discovered where the no-go spots are. So
nice.
Plus the sunrise is coming up, so I'm kind of killing two birds with one stone.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, everyone's going to love this. And the website for the conference is cuasia.co, and we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to jump right in. Mike, tell us a little bit about you. I know that's usually a long story, but tell us the brief version of Mike LaRosa.
I will do the briefest Cliff Notes version I can.
Awesome.
I am 100% a co-workaholic. I have been familiar with co-working since 2008, yet when I started my own business in 2012, I never thought to go to a co-working space. And, you know, within 6 months, was miserable at home. I was lonely. I missed interaction with people. My head was always in the fridge. I joke that, you know, I put on 40 pounds. And thankfully, clients of mine asked me to help them launch in Kansas City, and we opened their office at Think Big Partners in downtown Kansas City. And it was through that kind of fate interaction that I rediscovered co-working, and you know, a little over a year and a half later, now I'm the producer of Juicy, the Global Coworking Unconference. So it's been a magical journey. It's been kind of a roller coaster ride, but most definitely wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome. So what co-working space do you frequent most often these days?
So it's actually funny. Up until the end of the year, I was a member at Affinity Lab in DC, which was kind of recognized as the first space in the city. It had been open for 13 years. And unfortunately, the space closed due to kind of redevelopment and, you know, real estate issues outside the control of the owners. And so 10 Affinity Lab members, I'm one of them, we've actually moved into WeWork Wonder Bread Factory right around the corner from our old space, and we convinced them to rent us the 20-person office, and so we've actually created our own little Affinity Lab within WeWork.
Nice.
So that's where...
group within a co-working space.
Hey, you know, so that's... So it's actually funny. I'm in WeWork in D.C. more often than not. I've got some clients that are in the other locations. But, you know, I'm in Austin a lot, so I'm always out of link with, you know, owned by our dear friend and my business partner, Liz Elam. And then also I've been spending a lot of time in DC at Cove, which is a concept that I think a lot of people will be really interested in. It's an hourly model. They don't brand themselves a co-working space. They brand themselves a productivity space. But it's perfect. He's opened, the owner, Adam, has opened 6 locations in the last year. So the growth is phenomenal. They're very small footprints, but it's so convenient because I call it the library of co-working. You know, if I'm in between a client meeting, I can hop in for an hour, grab some really fast Wi-Fi, some delicious complimentary beverages, and then I just pop back out. So that's kind of like the new space that I've been hitting frequently when I'm home in DC.
I love it. And I have not heard of them, so we'll have to check them out. This is why I'm so excited to talk to Mike LaRosa, because he just knows a lot about co-working. So he's kind of in the middle of it all. So I'm excited to talk to him about a recent post on the Juicy site about co-working trends in 2015. But first, before we jump into the trends, so you're on the Juicy planning team. We have to do a little plug for the conference.
Yes, most definitely. We will be in Berkeley, California, the first week of May, May 6th, 7th, and 8th, for Juicy USA. I'm super stoked. I'm going to be out there next week on a site visit, putting the final touches on planning. And then we've actually, we're announcing it officially today here in Bali, but Juicy Australia will start in this year. It'll be the first year for that program, the 5th and 6th of June, that Thursday, Friday in Sydney. And then we've also announced Juicy Canada is coming to Toronto. And we're so honored and proud to be working with Ashley Proctor from the Foundry in Toronto. She is the executive producer for Juicy Canada there. So those are the 3 conferences that we've got ready to announce this year so far. And we've got a couple more that we've got in the works.
I love it. Juicy's taking over the world. All in fabulous, wonderful places to visit.
Well, yeah, there's just so much co-working awesomeness that we have to spread the word and get more people to learn all about it. I think that's the thing that I can't get enough of. Jamie, I think I shared this with you before. Out of the attendees that we had that came to Kansas City last year for Juicy USA 2014, 2/3 of them were brand new. So that just shows us how much growth potential is in this market. But out of those new attendees, half of them hadn't even opened a space yet. And so I just find it fascinating. They're coming because they're like, how do I do this? How do I negotiate a lease? You know, I believe you hosted a webinar just 2 weeks ago all about, new trends in real estate partnerships. What furniture do I need? What software do I need? And just like you hadn't heard of Cove in DC, I can't tell you, not a week goes by that I don't learn something completely new that blows me away, whether it be a new software out there or a new furniture line or a new space concept. And I think that's what my goal for Juicy is, to kind of be that that source where people can depend on us to provide them not training, but kind of, information, advice, and resources, whether they want to open their first space or they're looking to open up space number 20.
Yeah, totally agree. I've been to 2 of the Juicy conferences, and I guess it's an unconference.
Yeah.
and just tremendous value, tremendous people, amazing learnings and networking. It's a must do. So we'll put a link to the Juicy site in the show notes, but it's gcuc.co if you want to check that out. So leading up to the conference, the Juicy folks are putting blog posts on the website, co-working related, and there's a recent one, co-working trends in 2015, and since we're still in January, I thought it'd be fun to dig into those trends. So let's jump into those. Trend number 1 is current co-working operators will supply the majority of the explosive growth in the market. Tell me a little bit about this one by current co-working operators. Do we mean most of the growth will come from expansion of existing brands versus new spaces?
Yeah, so let me preface this by saying this is Liz's list of trends. I'm in full agreement with them, but I apologize if I can't speak too much to them with numbers. The trends that we've seen when it comes to growth, I think we're finally hitting that stride where the larger operators, I would say with, you know, three or more spaces, they're finally get kind of building that momentum mm-hmm. where they're hitting kind of what their financial business goals were in their plans. They've been around now for 3 or 4 years. So I think that take a look, you know, WeWork's, of course, a wonderful example. Love WeWork. They're awesome. They might not be typical traditional co-working, but, you know, they play into the fit. But, you know, there's other brands out there regionally, kind of like Nextspace or Grind or Workbook, that they've kind of built a really great foundation, and the brand is now at that point where they could very easily open up, you know, maybe 2 new spaces a year, maybe 3 new spaces a year, and not worry about overcoming the awareness. You know, the name is known, and more often than not, you know, Liz down in Austin is a great example. Her new space is going to be coming online this year, and it's just demand from people. You know, current members yeah. that either are growing out of the original yeah. concept she had, or people that are like, oh, I'm in love with it. When are you coming to this area? Absolutely. And so I think that's where the growth's coming from, by and large, for this year.
Yep, makes sense. Everybody's kind of getting their system down. And
it was interesting. I'll send you a couple of slides to post to this. Karsten from DeskMag did some of the initial responses from his global co-working survey. And it was really great to see that this was the first year that he could show significant increase in the number of spaces that were finally profitable. So I think that, you know better than I do. You've opened up 2 spaces, Jamie. So, I mean, you know that you always have to budget in that window where it takes to kind of all engines running.
Hit your stride. Yep, absolutely. Yep. So speaking of expansion, trend number 2, it will rain money. And I know Liz, yes, this is Liz's list. But I thought, yes, I figured you were a good one to chat with about these questions. I'm a co-working space owner. I've got my books all in order. I've been around for a few years. I'm on it. I've got it all down. Who are likely candidates to invest in co-working growth?
Well, right now, I mean, I would say local real estate developer. And, you know, if you're looking to get into co-working, you might as well sign up for as many commercial real estate blogs and email newsletters and magazines as possible, because they really were just so interconnected. I think, you know, WeWork has done some amazing things for the industry. It's built an awareness. People are no longer uneasy about the idea of sharing space. It's kind of mainstream. It's kind of hip and cool. And like real estate does with anything, you know, people follow where the money is. And so when WeWork was announced at that, you know, crazy $8 billion valuation, all these other investors are like, okay. So if the people they got on board to put in that much money, you know, signed on, this isn't a joke. They're taking it seriously. But the interesting thing is now they're trying to figure out how to make it, have to find out if it's actually profitable. And so, you know, if you have a space and you are running it, it's profitable, you've got a really interesting concept, I would start driving around looking for where there's some vacancy, reach out to that developer, and I think just kind of this speaks back to the webinar that Lexi did a few weeks back, rather than just trying to negotiate a typical lease agreement, reach out to them and see, are they interested in making an investment? And so I think the regional developers, that's probably where you'll be able to get the fastest money. You know, they've more than likely they're liquid. They've got access to easy capital. If it's their own space, they've got, you know, some skin in the game. And it will kind of lower the bar for entry for investment on their part. And I think banks are finally starting to wake up to this. You know, I've gotten some phone calls from commercial lenders that are asking for advice on how to contact owner-operators, the best way to network with them. But also they want to learn from them because they see the growth and they see the future of work, how it's moving. But because they're bankers, they still don't really understand it. And so I know one in particular that I was working with on a project, you know, it took 3 or 4 meetings to get him to really understand what the numbers would look like. And that, you know, revenue positive might not come in year one. It might not come until halfway through year 2, but that by year 3, you know, the plan would be rocking and rolling.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've been speaking with different folks on the real estate side of things. The webinar that Lexi did a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned a couple times, we did a webinar on joint ventures with landlords and looking at that as a new model for co-working space owners because, you know, to your point, the model often takes a little bit of time to get off the ground. But it can also be really advantageous to a landlord who's looking for some upside in the model versus a traditional lease. So we'll link to that webinar in the show notes. But I've been speaking to a lot of folks in real estate, and so many people are starting to understand that the way people work and the way people think about workspace is shifting, and everyone's trying to figure it out. And there are a lot of really positive reasons to want a co-working space in a building. So I think you're right. I think investors that own buildings, developers that own multiple buildings and are looking for a way to make the building more attractive, REITs that are looking to redesign space and offer co-working type spaces as amenities could also be an option. So there's so much going on. We'll have to get a couple of real estate folks to be on the show to talk a little bit more about this. What are a couple of examples that you're seeing in terms of differentiation in the market?
Well, I think it's becoming quite niche and kind of it's going the way of different industries. One of the spaces that I mentioned or Liz mentioned in her post was Eastern Foundry. It's phenomenal. I met them recently in DC. They are a space that's now dedicated to small businesses and startups that are looking to do business with the federal government through small business contracting opportunities, larger, for any of you not familiar with federal contracting, it's a beast upon itself. I mean, you have these major multi-billion dollar vehicles that, the Northrops and the Lockheeds of the world will bid and win. But then with that vehicle comes all these, caveats that require that they sub out to either veteran-owned businesses, veteran-disabled-owned businesses, minority-owned, women-owned. And so Eastern Foundry, it's founded by three vets that came back from service, wanted to get into the contracting world, but had a product that they were trying to create themselves. They realized that a small business has an incredibly difficult time. And so that space's main focus is the programming for bringing in procurement officers from all the different departments, Department of Agriculture, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense. But they also have kind of not only one-on-one sessions with the procurement officers, but programming and assistance to get businesses certified to receive different certifications. So, we've got that. We did link. There's a space that is working and kind of more of a focus on medical marijuana, which is kind of, the new booming, it's medical marijuana and co-working are like these two, it's so funny that there's all these little overlaps and they're growing at such similar rates of speed all over the world. So you got that, you got craft spaces, but then also like the space I mentioned earlier, Cove in DC, when people ask me what space they should go to in DC, I ask them what they're looking for in a space. Mm-hmm. You've got Canvas, which is more designer focused, has more of a UX community. The reason that is because they have the most complete device bar in the entire greater Washington area. Any device that exists on any mobile operating platform, okay, they have it. And so corporations are coming in to send people there. So you've got Canvas for graphic designers. You've got Cove, which is the hourly model. You've got Impact Hub with multiple locations around the world that, is focused on businesses that are socially conscious and that do social good. And so I think, I was interviewed 6 months ago about the boom of co-working in DC. The future of co-working is truly community. If you can find a few people with some similar interests or similar work projects, people just want to be around like-minded individuals. And so as long as there's people that have opinions and have different perceptions on the work they want to do, I think that there will always be room for another type of co-working space or a different, a space with a different type of focus.
Yeah, we're all inherently social people and we want to be around people to solve problems. I love the specialization concept. I know a lot of co-working spaces love having a diversity of members. and there's tons of value in that, but I think it's really neat to think about a space like the government-focused space that you talked about in D.C. because, you know, they have such specialized problems that they can, there's so much synergy in helping each other tackle those and go after those and help everyone be more successful. So
just like with any industry, it's such a small world. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think this multi-billion dollar government contracting industry, you know, the people that are the movers and shakers, you know, they all know each other. And what's really funny is that it speaks to the power of maybe having some more niche and targeted spaces. Eastern Foundry opened the first week of December of last year. So they're, you know, they just hit like a month and a half, right? They're already at capacity on a waiting list, trying to sublease extra space in their building because demand's off the charts. That tells me that, you know, everyone in that community, they all get it. They all think it's a good idea and they're all trying to get in there.
Yeah.
I think that just speaks to the power of having kind of a little bit more of a focus on what you're offering.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think any sort of marketing lessons will tell you that the more clear you are about what you're offering, and oftentimes that can be niche, even if you feel like it's making the market, you know, a lot smaller, people see you and they know that you are for them. So if you are, you know, in that target segment, it's so clear that you belong there that it's like a no-brainer to sign up. Whereas a more generic co-working space, can be tougher maybe to see the value or justify the value. So it's an interesting trend. And I wonder too, so I go to a CrossFit gym and then sometimes I do yoga. So I have, you know, a couple of places I go depending on what I need. So at some point, maybe we'll all belong to sort of a specialized space and then have our more generic space that's closer to home or whatever that may be. So it'll be interesting to see how the landscape evolves. Co-working in new physical locations. So this is a fun trend. So it's pre-launch, but I have some folks in my Chicago space that are doing some interesting work around the live-work model. And I actually, after seeing Liz's post, I interviewed Troy Evans, who was referenced in her post, doing the live-work space in Syracuse. I grew up near Syracuse, and so I was really excited to see him referenced and gave him a call. And he was super generous with his time and talk about what he's working on. So there's a lot of people doing some really interesting things around co-working in new spaces. And I also think that people are looking at ways to sort of optimize the model in terms of overlapping, you know, kind of like the shared economy perspective. Like, okay, if there's a space that's not in use during the day for some reason, you know, can it be a co-working space? Like, I love the co-working coffee shop wine bar model, you know, because coffee shops obviously go with co-working, wine bar happens at night, you know, co-working during the day kind of need the same setup and amenities. Any other interesting physical locations that you've seen?
Well, so we did, I think we did include, there was a link besides the Syracuse space. For sure, there's some developments that are integrating apartment, kind of, they're building co-working spaces as amenities to residential buildings. There's some developers that are kind of taking it to the next level. So the Drew Companies out of Boston, Massachusetts, they're a developer there. They were the first developer to kind of take a chance on the Seaport District. So in the Seaport District, you know, they built the first office buildings out there in the late 80s, early 90s with Fidelity. Now that people are moving there, their new apartment building, the units are actually quite small. It's kind of like a micro loft type concept. They've got some traditional apartments as well. But the amenities, they've got these, you know, this massive theater room, this huge kitchen with, you know, a venue space that people can rent. And it's more than just a business center. You know, most apartment buildings always had like that one crappy desktop PC in a sketchy room with like the half-functioning printer. What they've done is that they've actually put in kind of a full-blown co-working space. They're renting it out during the day to people that want to meet for off-site meetings. And residents can use it because they realized that a lot of their residents were working from home.
Yeah.
You know, the other one I think is brilliant. I would kill to get in touch with anyone at Lifetime Fitness. I used to be a member for quite some time. You know, Lifetime Fitness, they've got these beautiful, beautiful, huge facilities with cafes and spas and the gym and the pool and the basketball court. You know, the cafes always have people in there with laptops.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of that this trend is kind of just a direct result from just people already doing it, you know, co-working in malls. Well, you know, if you think about it, you know, there's a lot of people that work on the road, the road warriors, whether they're in sales or they're, you know, area reps. I think malls are perfect, especially strip malls. I mean, strip malls have been proven that it just is kind of like a no-brainer for the birds. But yeah, I mean, and you always, you know, Jesse from Brooklyn Boulders.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a great example. Yeah.
Co-working space in a gym, you know, that's a perfect one. Or, you know, co-working space with a rock climbing wall, yeah, depending on how you view it. But I think it speaks to more of that people are finally integrating kind of their habits and their routines. And they're realizing that co-working really does support this whole, you know, mobile work movement. You know, that article in the Times 2 weeks ago, all about co-working vacations, you know. There's people that I met last night, they're here in Bali working at Huba because they can for 2 months, and then they'll go back to the States or wherever. Yeah. You know, I think that malls, it'd be interesting, libraries for sure, are jumping on the co-working trend as well. I mean, some people could claim that they were the original co-working space. And I know the Chicago Public Library System, New York, I'm familiar with the DC system, they are hosting office hours. They're renting out conference rooms. You know, they've got computers available for those that might not have those resources. And they're, you know, they're doing hackathons. And there's so many things that we do in our spaces day in and day out that now the library is starting to offer. And the best part, it's free.
Yep. Yep. I mean, I love it. It's so fun to watch two very different segments approaching, trying to engage in co-working, like malls and libraries. But trying to engage more in the community and trying to make, you know, their space more valuable and more compelling to people. The Westfield Shopping Center in San Francisco is opening a co-working space this week or this spring, and they've integrated a big event space. And I think one of the value drivers they see is offering members of the space the ability to do pop-up shops and to test things with retailers. It's neat the way people are thinking about it and seeing what value can be offered even in a non-traditional space.
Yep.
Well, speaking of Bali and underserved markets. So trend number 5 is co-working growth is finally expanding to traditionally underserved markets. How do you think the role of co-working spaces differs in a market like Indonesia from one in the U.S., like D.C.?
Well, it's interesting. I'm so glad that we could talk about this. And I'm actually out to say I'm thankful I had a reschedule on you because I've actually got an answer for this question now.
After, right.
You know, I met this guy last night who has opened up the first one of the first spaces in Vietnam. And he, oh no, yeah, there's someone in Vietnam and one in Cambodia. But it was, so these third world countries, you know, you have to think about it. These co-working spaces are changing the way people view their place in life. And so the story, you know, we were talking about the challenges that space owners have coming from the developed world into a third world country. These individuals don't even, the people out there, they don't even have the belief that they can make something more of themselves. Whether it come from a cultural standpoint, a religious standpoint, you know, they believe that where they are, the place that they are in this world, that is where they're meant to be. And so these spaces are being opened by expats. I mean, take a look at Peter here in Bali. He's Canadian. The gentleman I met last night, he's Canadian. You've got expats all over the world that have chosen this kind of digital nomad lifestyle. They got tired of dealing with Wi-Fi issues, and so they decided to open up their own space. And now that they've opened up their space, I think was probably always, not from a selfish point of view, but it was from a point of view that they needed to fit their needs. I need a space to do work,
right,
or I know other expats where we're all dealing with the same problem. Mm-hmm. Well, now they're getting inspired to reach out to the locals. I, as an American, take for granted the opportunities that we have to be entrepreneurs, the network and the support system that we have, whether it be through family and friends or through the government or through different local state and county agencies, those countries, that does not exist. And so I think, you know, what co-working brings to those markets is empowerment. And I would never want to compare co-working in third world countries to like what happened in the Arab Spring and how Twitter helped spread the word. But really, it's the same type of principle. People are feeling empowered to then take control of their life and pursue their passion. You know me well enough, Jamie, that when someone discovers that passion, you just can't turn it off.
Yeah.
literally, sometimes my friends, you know, there's a running joke whenever we're at a bar, whenever I bring up co-working, they just start, you know, the drinking game. Oh, here he is again. But when you've got people that are impassioned, I think it really supports that. And I think that really is spurring the growth. And it's, you know, it's probably also a place of safety. Mm-hmm. They can come and work. They've got that community now. And, you know, other than that, you know, they've got access to the internet. You know, it's hard enough to get a signal here, and Bali's kind of, you know, mainstream. Yeah. It's just, you know, with all the tourism that's here, consider, you know, imagine what it would be like to try to create a business concept in Cambodia.
Man, you know, we think what we're doing here is inspiring and empowering, and it really brings it home to think about it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
I love that it was meant to be that we had to reschedule, because you've gotten a couple more experiences.
Last night the guy was telling me all about the challenges, and I just would have never even thought about it, you know? It just kind of was like, oh my God, yeah, like you know, think about how hard it is to open up a space in the States. Yeah. And just, yeah, you know, throw in different languages and corrupt governments and trying to bribe people to do work, you know, to fix up the spaces.
Yeah.
You know, it really takes a driven individual to make that happen.
This is the value of Mike LaRosa's conference hopping, an inspiration for all of us to get to a conference outside of our home country. Really fun.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like I said, it's a tough job, but someone has to do it. And I'm more than happy to volunteer to be that man.
To be that guy. Good. Thank you so much for sharing your time at 6 a.m.
Oh, my pleasure.
While you watch the sun come up on your balcony, and for sharing your thoughts and perspectives. And we're all looking forward to Juicy this year.
Yes.
So we'll link to all the references that Mike made to other co-working spaces and to the research, et cetera, articles in the New York Times in the show notes. So if you're curious about anything he mentioned, then take a look at the show notes online at everythingcoworking.com.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.